Tyler's Long One on RadioLeMans.com.
Well, I'm delighted to say that once again I'm in the company of Bob Neville, the man behind RJN Motorsport. And for those that don't know, pretty much everything that is Nissan and GT racing at the moment seems to be going through RJN, which has made, as we're sitting here in September, first week in September, recording this, Bob, has made for a pretty busy year for you guys so far.
Yeah, very busy, John, this year. More busy, if that's the correct term, than ever before. Blancpain series with last year's winner, Jordan Tresson, and also our new winners, Jan Mardenborough, Brian Highcutter, starting from scratch.
And this is the Nissan GT Academy for those who didn't pick that up. Let's talk about Jordan, because in some ways, slightly the forgotten man at the moment. We talk about Lucas Ordonez a lot because of his fantastic rise to stardom and his fabulous driving that got him on the podium in P2 at Le Mans this year. Jordan, smashing lad. And you mentioned the Blancpain series, and he's really been cutting the mustard in what is, for me, a very exciting series.
Yeah, that is correct. Lucas was our first winner, and he did very well in GT4, as you know, before he went on to Le Mans series, and all very smooth. And then Jordan arrives, slightly quieter sort of character, but he's really been getting on with the driving and knuckling down, and he's studying engineering hard, so he's very good on that score with feedback. He's concentrating on that side of things, and in the Blancpain series, he's been completely up to speed with his co-drivers.
New series to get your head around this year, and it's a return for that type of car to a more endurance-based format, which not everybody gets.
No, that's right. For us, we build the Nissan 370Z as well as racing it, so it's a huge engineering task to try and make them go 24 hours. As you know, companies spend a great deal on testing normally. But the jewel in the crown for the Blancpain is the 24 hours of Spa, and we were fortunate to have a good result, of which Jordan played a key role.
Yeah, coming home, taking the checkered flag in what is never an easy race. Spa, even if it's a 20-minute blast as a sprint race, is a challenging circuit. For 24 hours with the vagaries of the Ardennes weather, you can never really know what it's going to throw at you. And in some ways, that's the beauty of that race.
That's right, and it was just like that this year. I mean, it was wet and it was dry, and we were on, and everyone's saying that the wet tyres were hard because they wouldn't last, and it was just like that. And we fortunately got things right, and so, you know, to finish 19th overall and first in GT4 was a great bonus. And the drivers didn't put a foot wrong: Alex Buncombe, Chris Ward, and Jordan in the middle there.
How's the development of the 370, the Nissan 370Z GT4 car developed over the years? What's the genesis of that? Because we've seen various iterations of the cars in other racing, including in the Nürburgring 24 hours, where the car's a slightly different specification. But this GT4 car now seems to have got it really tied down and very, very competitive. How did you get there?
Yeah, we are there now with it. It's very competitive, and we're leading the Blancpain series. It has been a long and hard road. Mm. You were there at the Nürburgring. We had a particularly tough 24-hour race this year. I don't think the Nürburgring is a tougher race than Spa, actually. They're equally tough for different reasons, but we did have a hard time of it there. We've had some good engineering support from Nismo, and that's continuing. And we just hope it progresses and that the car becomes even more competitive. But, of course, it is, in the end, balance of performance. So they will slow us down, and they have slowed us down.
The car itself is effectively an evolution from the 350Z that you guys campaigned with some success, one should say, when that car was current. They look very similar to the naked eye until you see them close together, but in point of fact, the 370 was a brand new car for you guys to learn.
We had different front suspension layout. It's a different track, a different wheelbase. It's technically a very different car. There's the only thing that we had already developed from the 350 we could carry forward Initially was the engines, but we now run a 3.8-litre engine. But the only other real thing is the differential. The rear diff was the same. So we had that sorted from the 350. We carried it forward. But other than that, we virtually had a clean sheet of paper to start.
And GT4, you mentioned the competitive nature of GT4. And my goodness me, you're right there. But I find it very exciting how that series and that category of racing has really taken off in the last, 18 months, 2 years, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. It started way back. Indeed, I believe we were the first people to build a car in 2006. But it sort of pottered on almost, you know. It had a European series, which was quite well fought. But suddenly now, I think mainly because it's the premier championship in Holland, and there's a lot of really quick Dutch guys around and competitive Dutch racing drivers, as you know and I know, that has given it a lift. And then the fact that the Europeans, there is this Blancpain series which caters for GT4 as well. And there aren't many GT4 cars in it, but those that are extremely competitive. And our main competition comes from the Mansell boys and Lotus.
The other thing, as far as manufacturers are concerned, is GT3 and GT4. The cars look like the cars that many of our listeners and indeed ourselves would aspire to buying if we drop the numbers on the lottery this weekend. And the old adage of win on Sunday, sell on Monday is absolutely correct as far as these type of cars are concerned.
Yeah, that's right. The cars do look very much like the cars that people can go and buy. But they are also, from an engineering point of view, they're quite a tricky challenge because the rules say if your car has got ABS, you must use ABS. If you've got traction control, you can use traction control, which in GT3, you can't. So you have to develop those systems to work. So we have that challenge, and that makes the cars interesting to drive as well.
And what we should say there is, as good as any road-based traction control and or ABS is concerned, when you put slick racing tyres on and you've lightened the car up considerably and stiffened the car up considerably and you run it way outside the parameters of what you would do on the road, then those systems, is it right to say they need to be beefed up or do they need to be completely re-engineered?
To be honest, they're re-engineered, yeah. Yeah, they are.
And that side of things is, I guess nowadays, traditional engineering you might think of as, you know, suspension and stiffening the car up. That's all electronic, is it?
Not entirely electronic, no. But obviously all the ABS and so on is electronically controlled, but there's still a lot of mechanical work to undertake.
There's only so much you can do with the cars. The rules are quite proscriptive because there's an idea that motor racing is never cheap, but they want to keep costs down as much as possible to enable people to have a reasonable budget and still enjoy themselves. And that must pose some particular problems as well.
Yeah, it was conceived like that, for sure. It was conceived right back when GT2 started to get a bit thinner. Mm. And Stefan Rattel had the idea that GT4 would be a less expensive route. Mm. But in fact, they are quite little. They're expensive little cars, really, and that may be why it's taken right until now for the category to really crack into top gear. It's not a great deal cheaper than GT3. It's just different.
Now, you mentioned at the start of this a part of the amount of work that's going through the workshops at RGN is down to the Nissan GT Academy this year. Two new chaps for you to deal with, and hurrah in one respect, because Jan Mardenborough, finally in year three we get a British winner, and I make no apologies for being slightly jingoistic there. We've spoken to him on a number of occasions. He seems to be a very tied down young man for his age, which scares the life out of me. We've also been dealing for the first time, because it was the first year of the competition in America, with a set of American candidates, and indeed Brian, the winner from there, has been working with you. How's that been? Because often we say with the Americans, you know, we're two countries divided by a single language, but their racing scene and our racing scene, though similar, are quite different.
Yes, that's absolutely right, and we're really fortunate with Brian. The two are completely different. We've got Jan, who's 19 years old. He's an enthusiastic guy, and then we've got Brian, our American, who's 30 years old, very laid back, very calm, and that's helping him also in his training and his approach. He does seem remarkably, nothing seems to faze him. But he has struggled a bit. We end up in strange hotels if you're racing in Pembrey or wherever you might be while trying to build up license signatures. And he struggles a bit with the menu, and he only drinks milk. And, I can imagine for him, in all seriousness, it's tough.
There's no language barrier for him coming across to the UK, but the way of living, in some ways is completely different and completely alien to him.
Yeah, well, you would know more than anybody because you're always in the States, yeah. So you're always there, so you would know. But for me, it was a bit of a surprise. And we were worried, saying, is he losing weight, because he's just not finding anything he can enjoy eating and things like that. But so we didn't expect that with an American. When we had an Italian lad for a while, we thought, but anyway, he's overcome all that and he's doing extremely well.
An older chap, as you say, and in some respects, that's not necessarily perfect. As we all know, the older you get, the harder it is to A, learn new skills, but B, unlearn bad habits. And as we all think we can drive, and many of us have been driving since we were 16 or 17, then you're bound to pick up some bad habits on the way. How has Brian approached that side of things with the fact that he is clearly a bit more mature, has a bit more experience under his belt? And as I say, that's not always a good thing.
No, I don't know what he's a bit of a closed book as to where he came from and what he did previously. But I think it speaks highly of the Nissan PlayStation GT Academy that whoever wins it. And it doesn't matter whether you're 19 or 30. If you win it out there at Silverstone in that competition, to come then to us to learn to be a racing driver, it doesn't matter what age you are. And he happens to be 30. And so there are the advantages of that and the disadvantages.
Does he have an open enough mind to be able to listen to the mentoring that he's obviously getting to be able to drive his talent forward?
Yeah, he seems, Christian Van seems to particularly be working closely with him. And Christian, such an experienced driver, and they seem to have hit it off well, and he's really responding to Christian's advice.
It's been a manic few weeks for the guys, because from winning at Silverstone to getting their International C licence has been a matter of a few weeks, whereas for most people that might be a season and a half, or two seasons of racing, and it's as of necessity, has been a very compact schedule, and that must throw up its own problems for you logistically, but and trying to get the guys to knuckle down.
Yeah, for us it's a huge task. I mean, it doesn't sound massive to say we're going to go to Rockingham, Pembrey, Snetherton, but every weekend, no let up. Two cars must be ready, prepared, bang. All my mechanics, forgotten what their wives look like. it really is quite a tough logistic issue. And the strange thing is that it suddenly occurred to me, they've done all the races to qualify for International C in 8 weeks. And we're at Rockingham.
Which is how many?
Eight weeks.
And how many races?
It's 12 signatures.
Right.
So we didn't do 12 races because they get a signature for advanced ARDS, Advanced Racing Driver School, here at Silverstone. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they did all this racing. And then when we arrived at Rockingham for a nice national, what you and I would call a club race, mm-hmm. With 30 cars in the race, all unknown to us, mm-hmm. It suddenly occurred to me that our two drivers were the experienced drivers. And I said, look, when we were doing Brit Car a fortnight ago, you're having Ferraris and Moslers coming by you. Mm-hmm. You had to watch out for them. This time, you're the guys that are going to be going past, people with a cross on the back, mm-hmm. who are taking 2 years to do exactly what you've just said. Yeah. So I said, you have to now watch out for them cutting across you. Yeah. And they looked at me with blank faces. I said, you are now the experienced drivers.
Yeah, you've done more races in 6 weeks than these guys have done in a year.
Yeah, that's it. And they took it on board, and there were one or two close shaves. And indeed, there were two races on that day, and both cars came back with scrapes and marks on. And I said, I don't want to see that in the next race. Because those guys out there are racing with their own budgets.
Yes.
And you've got to go past them and respect them, and they're doing their own championship.
Yeah.
And it seemed to work, because in race two, nothing.
Have there been any disasters? Have there been any all-nighters where the guys' ambition have overcome their clearly very good talent, but still their building talent?
No, there's been one or two damaged wheels, which is irritating. You don't like to lose BBS wheels. but generally speaking, we've been very fortunate, John.
Now, you're building towards taking these guys to the Dubai 24 in early 2012, a race you can hear, and the build-up to which you can hear here on RadioLeMond.com. We'll be covering that as our first major event of 2012. I'm not sure how you can ever prepare anybody for a 24-hour race, not least a 24-hour race in a place that is so culturally diverse as Dubai.
No, we're fortunate that we have the experience of 3 years. When we first took Lucas Ordonez there, he had, he had Johnny Herbert with him, and huge pressures all around him. But I can honestly say, with hand on heart, he didn't have the training that these guys have had. Because we've developed the program, they now get far more testing, the mentor idea. One, Michael Mallett and Christian Van permanently with these two winners, Jan and Brian. Silverstone have dovetailed their program to, I mean, today here we are on a wet Tuesday afternoon, and those two guys are going round. None of that existed in Lucas's day. So I think they're going to be ready for Dubai. They really are going to be ready for Dubai.
What racing do they have between now and then? Clearly, doing a 24-hour race, well, there's one or two around in that time, but that's a major commitment. How do you prepare them race-wise, and how many more races will they do now that they've qualified for their international circuit?
Yeah, they're doing their first race in the GT4 car this weekend, which is a short race. We've got them scheduled to go to Zandvoort and do a European race, because I particularly like Zandvoort. I think it's a great circuit for them to learn. And 98% certain. Well, I think it is actually now agreed they will both do the 24 hours of Silverstone in one of our 370Zs. So
at least they'll get some idea, because I presume neither of them have raced in the dark so far.
No, by the way, yes, we've got a night race at Brands Hatch to do between now and then.
Very good. See, that's how the programme develops all the way along. Just a quick word about GT Academy, because you have been involved from the start. You and I were standing on, not dissimilar to this, on a very muddy bank when Stowe Circuit was still being redeveloped, watching the original guys go through, of which, of course, Lucas Ordonez came through so impressively. In the same way as the race car has evolved, the programme has really changed almost beyond comprehension, as you mentioned. But what hasn't changed about it is it keeps turning out these great drivers, which I think will shock a lot of people, Bob.
Yeah, I think it will shock a lot of people. I mean, as I say, Jordan is relatively quiet character, but his times are very, very impressive. And the same with Lucas, and these two the same now, Jan and Brian. There's something about this program that brings to the fore talent.
And talent is constant, of course. Form, they say, can come and go, but talent is constant. I mean, are we looking down the line here, Bob? You and I come from an era where the path to motor racing success, whether it was GT prototypes or single-seater driving, was a series of come and gone, but there's been a pretty well-developed set of stepping stones, if not the Jackie Stewart staircase of talent. But certainly, you do a bit of karting, you might do a bit of Formula Ford, or you might do some regional or national tin-top racing. Do you see a time in the future when that will have gone completely, or will, and have this virtual side of things take over, or can these things dovetail together?
Well, I think the advent of technology, virtual to reality, has come into the sport almost simultaneously with this program. But I like to think, actually, that this program was slightly ahead of it. Mm. But now we hear about F1 guys sitting in the simulators more than they sit in the cars. And so anyone who's got the capability of winning the PlayStation competition obviously is very adept at that side of the learning curve. Mm. So that's fantastic. As you say, when I was a racing driver, we could only learn circuits by driving around them. you went from one step to the other if you were lucky. And I think there will always be the traditional route for those guys that are aiming for F1, as you say, karting to the extreme, Formula 3, and so on. That route will probably remain. But for the rest, I think all of a sudden there seems to be a lot of chopping and changing. And
there must have been those when, I think back to Lucas particularly in that first year, there was a lot of people who didn't just raise their eyebrows but said, this is madness. You're setting yourself up for a fall here. There must be a certain sense of satisfaction from yourself, Nissan, and everybody involved in the GT Academy, the guys at PlayStation, etc., to have seen how well Lucas did, and indeed Jordan, and hopefully the two new guys as well. That must be a real fillip for the programme.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, Mark Bowles from Sony and Darren Cox from Nissan got me in a bar, which is probably the best place, when it didn't say, look, we've got this idea. And I thought, what? But as soon as the first week was over, and the best drivers came to the fore, and we had a German driver, if you recall, Lars Schlommer, who almost made it, but he couldn't make that final step, but it was of no concern because we had Lucas. But it became apparent that this is a good way of finding really good racing drivers.
Did it surprise you, honestly? You and I are of a similar era in terms of watching and being involved in motor racing. Did it surprise you how quickly, albeit not everybody, but the likes of the guys who were at the very top of the gaming side of things, could make that leap?
It did surprise me. Yeah, it really did. Given the fact also that they've got fantastic instruction here, and that, you know, that would, for anyone to have that in the normal way would be a real privilege, wouldn't it? So they are fortunate, but even so, they needed that base of talent to convert that, and they've done it on their own merits. They really have. The support we've given them is what they've needed, but they've actually done it with their own talent.
And dedication as well. I've talked to all of the guys down the years. I've talked to Jan most recently, and what really impresses me is twofold. The dedication, the amount of time they're prepared to sit on the game and make sure that they get through into the competition proper. And the second thing is their willingness to be open to new skills and to learn. And I suppose those are two things that have never changed in any sport, and particularly in motor racing. You need those two attributes.
You do. I think above all else in motorsport, whether you're a mechanic, whether you're the chief designer of an F1 team, a team manager or a driver, determination is the only thing that gets you through it.
So here we are towards the end of the 2011 season. Still plenty to go for you. We're already looking forward to 2012 and that Dubai 24 hours when you'll be running the winners again. And there's an event, Bob, that has really taken off in the last, it'll be the seventh, sixth iteration of it coming up. There's an event that, if we didn't know already, really proves that endurance racing has a real place in international motor racing and in growing international motor racing into new markets.
Yeah, that is. I think that event has really proven to people that there are room for maybe more 24-hour races than there are at the moment. They do seem popular, don't they, especially with the competitors and certain...
It's good value, isn't it?
It's good value. And certain sponsors seem to see that they can get good value from it.
You've done that race for the last number of years. I've been to the racetrack, driven around there in a variety of cars. I think it lends itself pretty well to a 24-hour race. I haven't been there for the 24 hours. Give me a flavour of what I'm going to see when I go there in January.
Well, we didn't do it last year because Jordan Tresson didn't win a drive in Dubai, unlike Lucas. he won a season in GT4. So we didn't go last year, but really it's a pleasant place to do a 24-hour race because it's not normally raining and cold and like the Nürburgring or Spa. Yes. So it's a pleasant place to race. There are one or two bits of nasty concrete that can draw you to them if you're not careful. For the rest, it's almost like having a holiday, John.
And the guys at Kreventnik who organise it have got a lot of experience behind that. Indeed, they run a couple of other races, 12 hours at Barcelona, 24 hours in Hungary, and they've just taken over the Bathurst 12 hours as well. So the organisation-wise, those guys, and interesting, you mentioned the Dutch earlier on, the massive interest in endurance racing from Holland, that's where they're from too.
Yeah, that's right, they're from Holland, and they're all part of that small but really professional endurance brigade. I mean, they came up with this thing, this Code 60. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I really think it is absolutely excellent.
This is instead of necessarily having a safety car out there?
Yeah, because every race we've been to of late, there's always been a post-mortem afterwards about who's missed out because of the safety car, what point it was deployed, who got stuck in the pit lane on a red light, all those terrible things that can happen with safety cars. But it's so simple. Out in Dubai, if there's an incident and it's an all-course yellow, up comes 60. Everyone keeps the same distance that they originally were. They immediately do 60 kilometres per hour.
Which just happens to be the pit lane speed limit as well, so nobody has got any excuse for going over it.
No, it really does work very well. OK, you could argue it doesn't make the racing quite so exciting because you don't get people closing up and then the restart is another race. But it means that if someone's worked hard to get an advantage, he keeps it. And if someone doesn't become unfortunate by losing out because of where he just happens to be when the safety car comes out.
It works for me. Safety cars soapbox me on their ranting almost every time because somebody has to lose out. And the more we try to stop people losing out, the more complicated and convoluted wave-bys, pass-bys and all that tend to get. So I'm all for making life easier for us and the people that we have to explain the racing to. Just finally, Bob, it's been a busy year this year. We're looking forward to 2012. Is endurance racing and GT racing a good place to be for you, for Nissan and for RGN Motorsport at the moment?
Well, I sincerely hope it is for Nissan because they're in the business of selling sports cars and endurance racing is the pinnacle of that. And for RJN, it's been good. We've been racing Nissans now for very many years, as you know. We just want to continue.
Good luck with that and keep up the great work that you're doing with the graduates from the Nissan PlayStation GT Academy, because I know from speaking to all of them, they really value all the input that you guys and the rest of your team do.
Thank you very much, John. Yeah.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.